In 1922, a crack Aberdonian was appointed Director General of a new British broadcasting institution. This man promptly sat down and defined three principles in accordance with which a public service broadcaster should operate. Today, still listened to by millions, they survive quite nicely indeed, thank you. If you want a podcast, if you've already exhausted what they have to offer, and if you can find it, maybe you should listen to Inform, Educate, and Entertain.
Yes, welcome to Inform, Educate, Entertain, the podcast panel show for everybody who loves panel shows but wishes they were hosted by a bungling idiot. My name is Sam Wilkinson, and every week on this show I give three comedians the chance of a lifetime as they interview for a job in my discount broadcasting company. It's like Radio 4, but crass, commercially minded, and completely lacking in intellect. Like Times Radio, then. Yeah, take that, Times Radio. Yeah. This week I'm asking my candidates to solve an actual mystery of what happens to birds in winter, to reveal the gradual misery of wild pigeons living in a shopping centre, to give masterful publicity to prey animals who escape their carnivorous tormentor, and to study the agricultural periphery to film a lamb still covered in placenta because they're applying to be natural history documentarians. Over three potentially exciting rounds, my candidates will be made to inform, educate, or entertain me for points. Anytime I feel one of those things, I will give them a point by ringing this bell. Ding! By which I mean, I will later edit in this sound of a bell. Ding! Whoever gets the most points gets the job, and the others get the boot. Let's meet my three nadirs of natural history. They are a renowned nursery rhyme expert, a surreal comedian with a masterful line in celeb impersonations, and a man who's also here. Meet Helen Swallow, Rebecca Turner, and Jack Shannick.
Hello.
So, just before we kick off the show for real, there's a chance to score some early points with our dead studio audience. Ever since this podcast began, I've been followed by the spirits of the departed, who sit in on podcast recordings and say mean things about my presenting style. My candidates will be allowed to add one person to this horrifying host. Already in the room, we have Victoria Wood, Anne of Cleves, Emma Crossan's grandad Alan, Des O'Connor, Freddie Mercury, Clement Freud, Jim Henson, Alan Rickman, Alfred the Great, Josephine Nevison, Wallace, Duchess of Windsor, Terry Wogan, Louis Le Prince, Chrysippus of Solly, Alan Corrin, Sigmund Freud, Harry Brayley, and Grumpy Cat.
Two Freuds.
Yeah, last week, Sigmund Freud was added to the mix to keep his errant grandson in check. Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah.
Rebecca, who have you brought along?
For my dead studio audience member, I've brought along Queen Mary the Thirst.
Ooh.
And I brought her along because I'd say she's the perfect BFF. She'd be brutally honest if you were acting a white plonker. If you insulted her, she'd burn you. But when the chips are down, you could both cry over a bottle of Prosecco and whinge about exes.
Nice.
In particular, the dodgy lad she shagged from Spain. I think it's like Philip II.
That's a point there. Thanks, Rebecca. Jack, who have you brought?
Maria Montessori.
Ooh.
Because she pioneered the idea of education as free play. And I've listened to some of these episodes and I thought we could do with a bit more of it. Which is not to have a go at previous guests. I blame the host. And also, her name sounds a bit like a dinosaur. Montessori Rex.
Ooh, it does.
Oh, hang on. You know, she was female. Once I suppose it has to be, it shouldn't be Rex, it would have to be Regina, wouldn't it? Montessori Regina. But Monty didn't let on. Very much a gentleman in everything but conduct.
Oh, that's 2 points. One for telling me the name of the person who founded Montessori schools, and one for your delightful dinosaur-based antics. Helen, who's your guest?
In keeping with the theme of this episode, I have gone with the crocodile hunter, Steve Irwin.
Ooh.
Taken from us far too soon, but not surprising that he ended his life the way that he did, being stung by a stingray barb.
Steve Irwin gets a point, definitely. Oh, welcome all three of them to the show, and I can see that the ranks of the lifeless have finished shambling off to their seats, so it's time to move straight on to round one.
Inform, educate, and entertain.
Eerie is that, isn't it, Mr. Wilkinson?
Yeah, you know, it's just setting the mood for a lovely, fast-paced, exciting quiz show. Just as Jane Goodall looked at a load of chimps mucking about picking fleas off each other and revealed they actually have complicated societies and wars and chimp stand-up comedians, so too is round one about watching a load of feckless apes being silly and learning something unexpected as a result. Each week on round one, I give my candidates a perfectly simple question to answer in a perfectly complicated way, and this week remains steadfastly the same. It's a question of televisual powerhouses this week, as we ask, what links Richard Attenborough with David Attenborough? Helen, why don't you take the first turn?
Richard Attenborough was a director and actor, and one of his best remembered roles was playing Chris Kingle in the 1994 film Miracle on 34th Street. A miracle is an event not explicable by natural or scientific laws. Jesus performed a miracle by feeding 5,000 people from just two fish and five loaves of bread. Bread was an incredibly popular sitcom from the 1980s, which centred around the Boswell family. Mount Boswell is a summit found in the Canadian Rockies. Rocky Balboa was a fictional character played by Sylvester Stallone, also known as the Italian Stallion. The Italian Stallion is also the nickname of a sports car, Ferrari. Ferrari was formed in 1939 by Enzo Ferrari as Scuderia Ferrari, the racing team, which succeeded the financially troubled Alfa Romeo racing giant. The head of the British operations of Alfa Romeo was John Attenborough. John Attenborough was the brother of Sir David Attenborough.
I'm going to give you 2 points for that one on the end. I had no idea there was a third Attenborough brother.
Yeah, good old Google. Yeah.
Helen Swallow opening the scores there with 9 points. Congratulations, woo! Helen. Let's move over to Jack Shannock.
David Attenborough. He's a wonderful man, David Attenborough. Everyone will tell you that, won't they? But don't get me started on him. I know everybody loves dear sir or madam David Attenborough, but for the wrong reasons. There's that much rubbish talked about the bloke. They say he's all about the animals and conservation and a great broadcaster. No. He cannot be both. He can't be... No, bear with me. How come... we know what he looks like. There's no need for him to be in front of the camera. A great broadcaster knows how a voiceover works. As Brian Clough once said, less of your mush and show us more animals. And if he used a voiceover instead of doing it live, he wouldn't need to bloody whisper. I mean, we could see him sweat on Instagram. If I want to watch humping hippos or defecating dromedaries, show us the hippos humping the defecating dromedaries. If I want to see safari suits, I'll watch Roger Moore. Wildlife documentary is a misnomer. If it's about cheetahs cheating, show us them. That's a documentary. And yet when Leni Riefenstahl gives the limelight to Hitler, he gets a bad press. He had two big breaks with David Attenborough. One, urban sprawl, and two, the death of Princess Diana. Because after that, the British public needed someone to hold up as our Mother Teresa. Funny that Mother Teresa never married, isn't it? But David Attenborough's mother, incidentally, was a founding member of the Marriage Guidance Council. Mm-hmm. And she did sterling work. But Mother Teresa's spinsterhood remains a question mark on Mrs. Attenborough's record. Anyway, Mother Attenborough and her husband are better contenders for the title of British Mother Teresa because they adopted two refugees from Nazi Germany. They didn't adopt Richard Attenborough, though. They had him the way David Attenborough showed hippos, I should think. I wasn't there to film it. But maybe David was, and that's where he learnt to whisper. He'd have been better off miming. Marcel Marceau, he was a mime, wasn't he? And Marcel Marceau was a later TV personality who also rescued children from the Nazis as a member of the French Resistance. Never talked about it. Now, that's why all the Attenboroughs, all his human family, are better than Leni Riefenstahl. And that's why they should be most famous for working against Hitler, not for him. Oh, and in case I didn't make it clear, Richard and David are brothers. At the risk of offending any fans of Hitler, like two peas in the same pod.
Jack Shannock, 12 points. Congratulations.
Well,
I particularly enjoyed the way we reached Richard Attenborough and then left again. Rebecca, what have you got to offer?
Previously mentioned, Richard Attenborough was an actor slash director. He was in the original stage run of Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, 1952. And he later directed the biopic Gandhi, 1982. Returning to acting as an owner of a dinosaur theme park, Jurassic Park, 1993 and then 1997. Interestingly, whilst Richard acted as a person knowledgeable in nature, his brother David trained in natural sciences at Cambridge University, but never acted, so a bit of an old switcheroo. Another link is the fact that they both took on behind-the-scenes roles in TV slash film. Richard directing, David, controller of BBC Two, 1964 to 1969. He brought Monty Python's Flying Circus to our screens. In 1972, David returned to programme making, one of his most famous being The Living Planet, 1984. He is a patron of the World Land Trust. You could say that both brothers have been involved in media and in animals, be it trying to revive a dead parrot or a dead dinosaur.
Oh, wonderful. Rebecca, thank you very much. That is 7 points, which is a very respectable opener. Plenty of time to catch up.
Thank you.
Richard Attenborough started a thing called Beaver Productions, or Beaver Films, I think.
Oh, you see, I'm not sure what to do with that now, because if I give you a point for it, I've got to work out how to edit it in later on. I'm going to give you a point anyway for it, Jack. It's good.
I thought we were live. I thought I could throw it in. I didn't realise how regimented it all was. Maria Montessori would be turning in her seat in the audience.
What tends to happen is that I give out points all over the shop, and then I edit out the bit where people got points, and the show makes no sense.
Oh, just...
just like on any real BBC panel show.
Stick it in the footnotes.
So, in the rear on 8 points, we've got Rebecca Turner. Slightly ahead of that on 10 points, we have Helen Swallow. And in the lead, but still easily surmountable if I feel like rewarding the others a bit more, it's Jack Shannock on 15.
The Worthy Drama Round.
Round two is the Worthy Drama Round, where our candidates get the chance to follow in David Attenborough's footsteps and take time out from looking at tigers to run BBC Two. Last week, I gave each of my candidates a title and sent them off to write an informative, educational and entertaining play for us all to perform now. There's bonus points on offer for the best acting, so I want to see some Jeff Goldblum-level stuff. The only problem here is that all the titles I gave my candidates are rubbish. Rebecca, what was the play I gave you?
My play was To Film a Mockingbird. We join characters Finch and Harry Heron.
Bird noises. I'll edit those in later.
Oh, grouse. A human shat on me.
Apparently, that's good luck, Harry. Anyway, I'm so bored.
I might drop out of school, Finch. Do drugs, then become a multi-award-winning singer who later on gets cancelled.
Nerdy Mikey Mockingbird, out of breath, runs after Harry and Finch.
Oi, you bastards! Wait for me, I want to be a dropout twit too!
Bastard, one of the heaviest living flying animals, 2 foot 11 to 3 foot 5 inches tall. Most of the global population can be found in Spain, although they have reached as far as Russia. The Latin name is Otis Tarda,
Okay, Boomer. It's Mikey Mockingbird. He's so gullible.
Harry, don't be so judgmental. Mikey, you really want to hang out with us?
Yes, please, Finch.
We should hang out at this abandoned worksite, Mikey.
I don't know. There's a lot of dangerous equipment there, like cranes.
Are you a chicken, Mikey? I thought that you were cool, man.
Yeah, don't be such a roadkill, Mikey.
Hey, stop mocking Bird me. I'm going to climb on these unsafe rocks, which have a do not climb sign on them.
Young Mikey proceeds to climb the perilous rocks, which are not at all suitable for young birds. Basically, he's acting like a massive tit.
Mikey! Oi, Mikey! Maybe you should get down. It doesn't look safe. We should help him, Harry.
No way, Finch. It's so funny. I'm going to film him on my smartphone.
We hear a loud squawk as in a split second, Mikey Mockingbird slips and falls to the ground. All is silent. He seems to be caught between a rock and a hard place.
No! Scream!
Thankfully, Mikey Mockingbird was okay. These naughty birds finally learned their lesson. Don't sneak onto unmanned work sites. Don't give in to peer pressure. Just say no. Turn off gas heaters. Don't trespass. Remember, have good play. Not owl play. This play is now available for the Key Stage 2, 3 and 4, as well as a learning pack for Open University.
Brilliant.
I don't reveal scores at the end of round 2 for the purposes of mystery and for fudging it if someone pulls out too far ahead. But let's go speak to Jack. Jack, what was the play title I gave you?
Also rubbish. Gentle Ben prefers blondes.
That's one of my favourites.
Oh, okay. Excellent title.
Thank you. Thank you.
In your mind. Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to do me?
What makes you say that, Benjamin?
Well, the script, same as you, mate.
Ben, what do you think of me?
I prefer blondes.
The end. Prequel. In which it is related how it came to pass that Gentle Ben prefers blondes.
Look, it's Bob Marley, singing about his preference for natural hair colour, it seems.
What? No woman, no die?
No, seems more like Buffalo Soldier.
What's that got to do with hair colour?
Nothing. I was wrong.
Looks like you are wrong. That's not Bob Marley. That's the Scottish-Israeli tribute act. Wee Benjamin.
Oh, he's Jewish then?
No, he's a Gentile, Ben.
Look out! He's coming in now.
What do you think he wants?
Probably just some sort of customer shopkeeper dialogue commensurate with the radio sketch genre.
Oh, get you!
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. What can I get you?
Good morning. What can I watch him getting you?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll have... Look! A penguin!
That's not a penguin. It's a chaffinch.
Oh, I thought it was small. I'll have 2 chaffinches then. In a green wrapper.
Only got blue wrappers.
No, they taste like the sky.
Just eat the chaffinch and leave the wrapper.
Yeah, I could unwrap one for you.
No, dear good sir. A word in your shell-like rectum.
I can't hear anything there.
You can if you put your head between your legs.
Ooh, it sounds like the sea.
No, you've put it too far.
It's about time I said something.
Go on then, it better be good. A fine contribution.
Let her talk, ma'am.
It's my shop.
The customer is always right.
You should stock glitter.
Well, most of the time.
If you stock glitter, I could put it in my hair.
What the hell would you want to do that for?
To ensnare a lover.
No, that's no good. You want it blonde. Think of the advantages you'd have if you had blonde hair.
Such as?
Easy to dye it pink.
What about blue?
No, it tastes like the sky.
What about green?
I'd look like a sea monster. Or grot bags.
What do you mean, or?
Why, you rotten swine!
Look, you do have a chaffinch and a green wrapper.
No, that's a penguin.
Yeah, stick it then.
Already did. Listen.
Yeah, sounds like the sea.
Right, green, blue, pink. What's the consensus?
It's a list of people who were in prison. Few of them are gentlemen. Few of them prefer blondes. Even Uma Thurman had to put on a dark wig to play a gangster's mole. So, by the process of elimination, it can be established that gentlemen prefer blondes.
And penguins?
Penguins prefer blondes.
No, gentlemen.
Penguins prefer gentlemen.
You know, why don't we ask one?
Right, everyone, fall in.
Yeah, sounds like the sea.
Tastes like the sky.
The end. Prequel. In which it is established that someone is entirely unfamiliar with the plot of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and the series Gentle Ben.
I think we've established that.
Look, a penguin!
No! Jack, thank you very much. Again, not revealing scores, but you've got another big bucket of points coming your way at the end of this round. Let's go over to Helen for the final performance of the night. Helen Swallow, what was your play?
I hope you don't mind. I slightly extended the title of my play. My play is The Explaining of the Shrew in the Willows. Slightly expanded a little bit.
Oh, for a muse of fire! Sorry. Two households alike in dignity. No, that's not it. Now is the winter of our discontent. Oh, dear God! I'll feast you in truth. Now that is the right opening for this play. But what the hell does that mean? It sounds like someone having an asthma attack. Oh, let's just go with this instead. The mole had been working very hard all morning, spring cleaning his house. So he decided to go for a spot of boating on the river with his good friend, Rat.
Dear Ratty, fancy the jaunt in your delightful little boat?
Why not, my good friend? I've brought some elderberry wine to help us unwind.
Mole spied out of the corner of his eye a very unwelcome guest.
Oh, Rat, quick, it's Shrew. Let's sneak away before we spot it. Oh, balls, too late.
Mole, Rat, my very good friends, are you going for a boat trip? Let me explain about boats. You see, the ancient Egyptians were the first to make use of these wooden beauties around 2500 BC.
Shrew, enough already. I know who first made boats.
Just sharing my wealth and knowledge with my long-tailed friends.
And with that, and much to the annoyance of Mole and Rat, Shrew jumped into the boat.
Oh, elderberry wife, my favourite. Did you know elderberries are a bluish-black or red berry of the elder, and they are also popular for making jelly.
Shut up, Shrew!
Mole and Rat sighed with frustration. Just as the boat was about to leave the shore, a loud shout was heard.
Shrew!
Shrew's long-suffering girlfriend, Kate, had found him.
Bugger, she's found me. I was trying to escape. She's got me booked onto some CBT course to stop me being an arrogant prick all of the time. Her word, by explaining everything to anyone who will listen. But to be perfectly honest, I haven't got a Scooby what she's on about.
Shrew, get out of that boat right now! I swear, if you make up another poor excuse for why you're not going to see your therapist, that is it for you and me!
Did you know You and Me was an incredibly popular show for preschool children that was first broadcast in the 1970s and presented by Cosmo and Dibbs?
Oh, for God's sake!
And with that, Kate pulled Shrew by his rather tiny ear and hauled him off for therapy. Eight months later, and Kate had finally tamed Shrew into submission, and he hadn't explained a single thing to anyone for almost 3 weeks. Mole and Rat had invited Shrew and Kate for a picnic to celebrate Shrew's newfound change in behaviour.
Mole, Rat, my fine friends, what an absolutely wonderful day for a picnic. You know, Kate, and this is Bianca, Kate's younger sister.
When Mo gazed upon the face of the beautiful young Shrew, he fell instantly in love. What silky smooth fur! What piercing bright eyes!
Bianca, I am so moved as to woo thee for my wife!
All the animals were stunned into silence, all except for Shrew.
Now, Mo, let me explain about the difficulties of interspecies relationships.
And with that, Mole swiftly and violently punched Shrew in the face.
Oh, wow. Three incredible plays, even by the standards of this ludicrous show. And, may I say, three of the finest actors I've had the privilege of working with. The acting points are going to be really difficult this time because all of you threw yourselves into the roles. But I do have to say, because this is nominally a Radio 4-style panel show and Rebecca does the most amazing Radio 4 announcer voice I've ever heard, it's 5 bonus points for Rebecca Turner.
Indeed.
Right, so that is the end of round 2 and the scores currently look something like this. Bringing up the rear on 26 points, it's Helen Swallow. 1 point ahead on 27, it's Rebecca Turner. And only slightly ahead again, Jack Shannock has 32 points.
It's time for this week's attempt at a third round.
It's nearly the end of the show and we're almost at the point where we find out which of our candidates will be in charge of natural history and which will merely be history. Before we finish up though, there's a chance to score some final points in our natural history themed quickfire round. So let's go! Note, edit this bit really tightly so you cut out all the candidate thinking time. Also edit out you reading this bit out because it's a joke that nobody enjoys and you insist on doing it every week. Jack!
Hello!
What is the world's fastest animal?
This is slow with a rocket up its ass. Probably. I should imagine. I've not seen one, but I can imagine it. I often do.
You can have 1 point for that because the answer I've got on the card is a cheetah in a jumbo jet, which is fundamentally the same joke. Helen! What was the last time you saw a horse?
Not walking into a bar.
Rebecca, when did you last see a horse?
I last saw a horse in my dream.
Oh, is that a recent horse dream?
Not a recent one. You know, you can't be too crazy about them horses, you know.
I'm thinking now of an obscure Belle and Sebastian song, Judy and the Dream of Horses. Shout out to the big Belle and Sebastian fans, nobody else will care. To the extent that it'd be very self-indulgent of me to leave this bit in at all, to be honest with you. Jack, when did you last see a horse?
Oh, I've got to talk about horses as well, ever. When did I last see a horse? I last saw a horse yesterday.
Did you actually?
No. I was using my imagination.
Fair enough. Helen gets the horse point, I think. Jack, do you like halloumi?
Never met her.
Rebecca, We all know apes are a kind of animal who love being hairy and mucking about in trees. Oh. But ape is also a verb that means to impersonate. Can you do a good celebrity impersonation?
I can do it. I'll do an impression of Patricia Routledge at an art gallery. Impressionist! He has poor eyesight! The woman's not Cubist, Richard! She's just big boned! Avert your eyes, Richard, you can see her Cubist clange!
It's 2 points on the board. Can you also do a celebrity impersonation while also impersonating an ape?
Give it a go. Okay, this is hard. Okay, I could do Supalad as an ape. That might work. Well, that's a
Yeah, go for it.
I'm a great hairy ape. Oh, I'm going to throw shit at the wall. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at me.
That's good. That's another 2 points.
Oh.
A very straightforward one, this one. Jack, what's the best animal?
I mean, they get a lot easier questions. I've got to say that. I mean,
well, you can do an impersonation of Sue Pollard as an ape if you like.
What? And that would serve as an answer, would it? Yeah. Or would it be a surrogate answer?
I'm going to ask them the same question.
Oh, that's all right. I mean, you asked her to do Sue Pollard as an ape, but nobody else is an ape. I mean, it's, the dice is loaded.
Yeah, it is.
The animal kingdom is so broad, and there are so many animals. What hasn't been found yet, even, and some has become extinct. Can we have extinct ones as well?
Yeah.
Montessori Regina. No, we'll have maybe a push me, pull you.
A push me, pull you.
Don't tell me you've never read.
Are you ignorant of something? It's Dr. Dolittle. I haven't even read the book and I've heard.
No, it. I don't know what this is. Is this
a push me, pull you?
I suppose it's like a mule or something, but the heads are facing the other direction, so they don't cooperate. One goes in one direction and one goes in the other, I think.
Yeah.
But the best animal is a duck-billed platypus, because I once had to describe the animal to somebody who had never heard of a duck-billed platypus, and they refused to believe it existed.
You got to be a Victorian explorer.
What I don't know is how big a duck-billed platypus is. That would fascinate me to see one in real life.
Given they got the beaver tail, I always assumed it was in scale with other beavers, but that might be wrong.
Beavers don't have scales. What are you on about?
3 points to Jack. Rebecca, what have you got in the realm of best animal?
I'd say a horse, but those horses that are represented in the tapestries, like the Bayeux tapestry. they're out of proportion and they just always look so derpy, like just like a medieval horse, but like an illustration of a medieval horse.
A medieval drawing of a horse. Yeah. That is a 3-point answer there.
I didn't know we could have heraldic animals as well.
Go on then. I mean, you've already got 3 points, so it's unlikely you're going to score any more, but let's have your answer.
A griffin with his head up his ass.
No, that's a no-point answer.
Well, I think it should have a point.
All right. Rebecca says you can have a point, so you get a point. Jack, which of your opponents deserves 3 bonus points?
Who's closest to me?
I don't think I should reveal that.
One and a half each.
Okay.
Diplomatic.
Helen, who do you think deserves 3 points?
Rebecca, just simply for that impression of Sue Pollard as an ape.
Rebecca, what's your thought?
I think the host gets 3 points because he's worked really hard.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, because he's giving you lots of points for now. That's why.
Yeah. I get 3 points. Thank you very much, Rebecca. And you know what? You can have 3 points as well for such a good answer.
Oh, God, the grease ass.
Well, we've reached the end of the interviews, so as in all job interviews, now is an opportunity for you to ask any questions to me.
How much is the pay?
Oh, well, you'll be paid in big-time Wilkinson bucks, redeemable at department/homeware stores nationwide.
Well, as I'm not in the running for the job, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, odds are you're not winning this one, Helen.
Yeah.
You know, it's a made-up job at a made-up company, so I wouldn't worry too much, to be honest.
Sam, have you thought working as a motivational speaker?
Yeah, you can have a point for that. Why not?
I've always wondered, and you're probably the best person to answer this, Sam, do you have really big eyes or just very small glasses?
While you were out of the room, Rebecca was complimenting me on my wonderful glasses.
That's why she got so many
sprinkles. These are the Anglo-American Groucho model, available at £129 from selected opticians.
You've been hard.
So, there we are. Another show comes crashing to a halt, and it's time to reveal who is our David Attenborough and who will be our David Hasselhoff. I can reveal the scores look pretty much like this. Springing up the rear on 32 points, it's Helen Swallow.
Woo! I'm your Hasselhoff.
Second place has 40 points, and our winner has 42 Ooh. Points. So it really did come down to who liked my glasses the most. It's Rebecca Turner. Hey. Congratulations, Rebecca.
Very well, very well done.
Anything you'd like to say on this momentous occasion?
Thank you very much. I honestly, everyone's worked so hard. I can't accept the first place. So I think a big round of applause to all the other acts, including Jack and Helen and Sam.
Oh, yeah. I got 3 points as well, didn't I? So I came last, not Helen. Rebecca, where can we find you on the internet? Anything you'd like to plug?
I, at the moment, online, I run a monthly surreal comedy night called Clog Comedy, and that can be streamed live every month to my Facebook page at Rebecca Turner Comedy. Or if you just want to say hello on my Instagram in general, then it's at Bex Turner Comedy.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Helen and Jack, anything you losers would like to plug? I think I'm going to cut myself calling you losers. That was just unpleasant.
No, my comedy night does not exist anymore. And I don't have any presence on the internet.
Fair enough. But listeners, if you do see the name Helen Swallow on a bill, you should definitely go see her because she's very good. Jack, anything from yourself to plug?
Well, I'm on Twitter. Twitter handle Jack Shannick. I have a YouTube, www.jackshannick.com. And if you call by there, I'll be loading some stuff up.
Wonderful. By the time this podcast comes out, it might actually be there. So check it out, listeners.
No, it won't be that quick. Look in a few months.
Cool. So all that's left for me to do is say goodbye from Jack, Helen, Rebecca, and of course our dead studio audience who refused to allow me even an hour's sleep undisturbed by terrifying visions. And hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of Inform, Educate, Entertain!
It was Inform, Educate, Entertain, starring Sam Wilkinson with special guests Helen Swallow, Rebecca Turner and Jack Shannick. The chair script was written by Sam Wilkinson, the programme was edited by Sam Wilkinson, and Sam Wilkinson had a lovely dish of Spanish-style Swiss chard just before the recording. Tweet him and I'll send you the recipe. It was a fictional production company production for IEE and the internet. Bye-bye now!